Welcome to Worlds Apart. In their efforts to isolate Moscow, some in the West are comparing it to apartheid-style South Africa, claiming that if Russia were to have its own Nelson Mandela, the Putin government would have to be ostracized and the country's economy boycotted. Is that a viable historical lesson to be applied again, or perhaps yet another incarnation of colonial thinking? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Tokyo Sekhwale, a prominent South African politician and businessman and an ally of Nelson Mandela. Mr. Sekhwale, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Great to talk to you, Oksana, as well. Nice to see you.
Now, you're literally worlds apart from Russia and Ukraine, in Johannesburg, some 15,000 kilometers away from where we are. How much attention is given to this conflict in your part of the world, and how is it covered?
The world is a global village, as you know, Oksana. There is nothing happening anywhere, whether it is in the Oscars in Hollywood, whether it's a tank in Mariupol right now, whether it's Boris visiting Western Ukraine, or whether it's a discussion by Lavrov, or whether President Putin or that Zelensky, we get these things on time, on the spot. And I must say to you from the start, we have expressed our disappointment by the fact that there has been an attempt to censor news. We come from the land of Nelson Mandela. We come from the background and the history of apartheid. Apartheid was a form of fascism. Your viewers and as well as listeners must understand that. The leaders of apartheid, a lot of them trained in Nazi Germany. And after 1945, they came here to establish their own form of Nazism or fascism, which was apartheid. So from the land of Nelson Mandela, we know what censorship is. We know what war is. We know what oppression is. And therefore, when the news is going on in the world, we see everything, especially with the use of modern technologies and social media and so on.
You know that from the very beginning, there has been a disagreement of who are the main protagonists, whether it is a neighborly strife between Russia and Ukraine for the independence of Ukraine, or whether it involves some other actors as well. How do you see it?
Well, Oksana, maybe I should have started by expressing from my side, you know, our sense of hurt, because we're human beings, and our sense of deep regret and pain to see what I consider brothers and sisters at war. For us, from this part of Africa, who have been helped by Ukrainians and by Russians, Uzbekistanians, Moldavians, Lithuanians, all those people who formed the Soviet Union, it's a heartbreak to see brother and sister against brother and sister. That's the first thing I want to say. We are also bleeding, because remember, we did not have a country. South Africa didn't belong to us, it belongs to the fascists and the Nazis who were in charge here, the nationalists. And many, many parts of the world gave us a home. Nasha Doma, our home, my home at a particular time was Sovietska Soyuz, the Soviet Union. My home was Moscow, and I've said this in the past. My home was Simferopol, it was Odessa, it was Kiev.
Well, let's clarify that for our audience, because in your younger years, you trained as a military engineer in the Soviet Union, and that involved traveling to lots of places around the Soviet Union. Can I ask you, seize this opportunity and ask you whether you saw any difference between the Russians and the Ukrainians at that time, political, ethnic, cultural, and do you think this war, this current conflict, could have been avoided?
Well, at that time, the Soviet Union was, you know, whatever differences there could have been inside among the people, cultural, linguistic, historical, and so on. For us, we were received by one group of people. We never had Ukrainians. I lived in Simferopol, in Odessa, in Sevastopol. I lived in Leningrad at the time. Today, they call it St. Petersburg. But most of the time, we lived in Moscow. For us, there were no differences. Maybe perhaps they were. Perhaps we're not made aware of these things, but we were received by one people. And we are thankful for that. That's why today, when the country has broken up in 1990, there's nothing we can do. But when this terrible conflict is taking place, it affects us as well. And we hope, and we have got suggestions about how this thing must come to an end, because all wars, at the end of the day, must come to an end.
But before we talk about how it may end, do you think it could have been prevented?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I will say what I've stated in public, I'll state what has been said over, even by many other people. At the end of 1945, you cannot change the story, it's true. Okay? We had two organizations when the Cold War began. We had NATO, North Atlantic Treaty Organization, and the Warsaw Pact, which was established from Warsaw in Poland. These were military organizations. These were not churches or philanthropic organizations or picnic organizations. They pushed us from 1945 until 1989, somewhere there, when the Cold War ended. So when that ended, Warsaw folded. That was over. NATO was kept alive. NATO is a war organization. It's not a picnic. So the problem is that NATO was kept alive. And nobody can dispute this and will fight for this point. Well, even if people think
say that nobody can dispute that, but yet we hear over and over again from Western politicians, from NATO officials, that NATO harbors no malicious intent vis-a-vis Russia.
We don't accept it. I'll tell you what, Oksana, sitting here as a freedom fighter, somebody who fought the struggle against apartheid, when NATO countries were helping here, what was NATO doing helping the apartheid government, giving them weapons, helping them even to build nuclear weapons here? People should not try to change history. I know today is convenient to drop Dostoevsky, to fight against Alexander Pushkin, to even fight Gogol, to fight against Tchaikovsky. It has become fashionable, but the truth remains. NATO started moving towards Russia. When you do that, no right-thinking leader will accept that, will stand up. Please don't disturb me, because I'm going to tell you what's happening here. Okay? About 1 hour from where I'm sitting, the Islamic terrorists who come from Iraq, Syria, and other parts have now come into Africa, to Egypt, they've come to Somalia, they've come to Mozambique, next to us, and they started the war here. This country last year moved our soldiers, because the danger is now next door. First time South Africa is fully at war to fight against these terrorists. So not just South Africa, a number of countries in what we call the South African Development Community. We went there because the danger is happening next door, not NATO, the terrorists, because we felt affected. Nobody must lecture us in the world about what NATO has done. It's true, we can see. Therefore, two things will happen. The reaction of Moscow to some people was irrational, but to some people in Moscow was rational. The national security interests of Russia had to be taken into account. Nobody must come with a story that says, no, we're just moving, it's a picnic, we're coming to deliver sweets and toys and teddy bears. It's not true. This is a military organization that was coming with tanks, and now they are shifting closer with short-range ballistic missiles. We understand that. You do that. Listen, you do that to any country. You do that to the Americans in Cuba. It's a war.
You don't need to persuade me that, you know, the Russian security interests are involved. I agree with you totally here. But still, this is going to be one of the most painful conflicts for Russia in recent history, precisely because of what you said. Most of us have family members in Ukraine. We have childhood memories in Ukraine. So even if the, you know, national security interests were involved, it was an extremely difficult decision. And we will have to live with the consequences of it for years and perhaps decades to come. Now, I want to turn to your own story, because you have a very interesting story of fighting for what you believe to be your country's destiny, being an anti-apartheid student leader, joining the armed organization of the African National Congress, then being in exile, being in prison on the Robben Island with Nelson Mandela, etc. In those times, did you ever doubt what was right and what was wrong? How did you arrive at your own conscience and your own peace of, you know, making those decisions? Because, you know, fighting against what you see as injustice, you cannot do that with, you know, in white gloves. Sometimes you take measures that you hate and still you have to take them.
It was not just a personal, the philosophy of our struggle, our political struggle for liberation against apartheid, which was a form of Nazism and fascism, was underpinned by the quest for justice, for equality, against racism. And we traveled the whole world, not just Russia. American people supported us. Mr. Biden was one of the best supporters of ourselves here in South Africa. We were supported from everywhere, in Britain and so on. So we were driven by the quest for equality, for non-racialism, and for justice, for liberation of our own country. All nations go through that route when you are faced with a problem. So we approach the current situation with that kind of an appeal. Let me come back to what the Ukrainian people are going through. You are correct. Here in South Africa, we've got Russians here, friends. We've got Ukrainians. And one friend of mine, his name is Artem. What we can never accept as people who are committed for social justice or human rights is the hatred that is being spread in the world today, and we will not be part of it. The hatred that says, if you're a sportman, you must denounce your country to play tennis. No person will respect anybody if you denounce your country for the sake of playing tennis or football. It will never happen. So the hatred that is being spread must stop. In any case, in our part of the world, we're not buying that. We respect Russian people, we respect as well Ukrainian people. We cry both with the security interests of President Putin. We also cry with the national sovereignty of President Ukraine.
From Ukraine, yes.
Yeah, we cry for him. We see him. He's being selfies, he does all sorts of things. He's a patriot, he believes in his country. But one thing, we must also be clear. People are trying to use Ukraine. And that's why President Zelensky must be aware of that. We are pleading for him. He's a younger boy than me. He was born in 1978 when I was going to teach. He's not a boy today, he's a president. I respect him. But must come and pause and realize that these people want to fight until the last Ukrainian. None of them want to put their boots. Wait. Here's the last point. And they're using Ukraine as cannon fodder. That must come to an end. Look what's happening right now in Mariupol. It's a disaster. Therefore, this thing must come to an end through the three Ds: discussion, dialogue, and debates.
For now, Mr. Sekhwali, we have to put an end to both discussion, dialogue, and debate because we have to take a very short break. But we will be back in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
Since the breakaway of the Donetsk People's Republic, war's been raging in Donbass. Ukrainian artillery's been shelling civilian towns and mining villages there.
Прильот! Вот, дым возле нас прилетело. Прильот! Вот он, прильот! Ну что, вы видели все своими глазами? Прилетело буквально 50 метров от нас, взорвалось Д-30. Слава богу, осколки не в нас полетели. Валим.
Well, Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Tokyo Sekhwali, a prominent South African politician, businessman, and an ally of Nelson Mandela. Mr. Sekhwali, before the break, you mentioned that in your anti-apartheid struggle, you were supported by people from around the world, even the Americans. But I know for a fact that Nelson Mandela, for quite some time, I mean, this person who is now considered to be one of the carriers, greatest carriers of human conscience, he was considered a terrorist and he couldn't receive an American visa for quite some time. When, in your own perception, when did that switch occur, when he stopped being seen as a terrorist and suddenly became one of the saints?
I've got news for you. Until this day, I'm classified as a terrorist in America. We took up this case with Nelson Mandela, went to the White House and met President George Bush and other people, Condoleezza Rice and so on. One of the things I was raising, and Mandela has said raised this question, was this thing of being continued to be classified as terrorists. You know, that is personal right now. It's in my passport. I'm still restricted. I go to America, but there's a restriction because we were having the courage and the honor of standing up for the freedom of our people. Now, in America and other parts of the world, there are two worlds, worlds apart, like you are saying, where some of the people are supporting us and some of the people are against us. But in your case, when you become a president, people change. I became a premier here. Nelson Mandela became a president. And during that time, I could travel free in America. But when I went entered the world of business, he started showing my passport again. So I kept on being stopped at the airports. In any case, I forgive them because it's not the current administration. They tried their best to change this law. It was not that easy. So we're classified as terrorists. But because we had won, you know, because we had prevailed, it was not going to be easy for America to continue calling us terrorists. But I'm saying there are good people in the United States and anywhere else in the world. There are good people in Russia. What we have to do through debates, through dialogue, through diplomatic discussions, we have to make sure that this war comes to an end. Oksana is affecting us here. It's affecting the world economy. Yesterday only, the International Monetary Fund, whatever it is worth, has downgraded the growth of the world, you know, because of what is happening, not the war itself, but the sanctions, because they cut both ways. Now, the last thing that we can ever have, and it's wrong, for any group of countries to take it upon themselves to put a gun on our heads. If you trade with Russia, we're in trouble. If you do this, you play sports in Russia, we're in trouble. So everybody is terrified. So when you talk about being, I'm Russian, you're in trouble. So we're being terrorized also for associating with certain people. And that will not accept because we are also free people in this world. But we believe that everybody, like the Mandela way, there is a need for people to sit down and dissolve this. Unfortunately, the talks which are happening in Belarus have not succeeded. President Putin said they've reached a dead end, but I would want to urge him, as somebody I know very well, President Putin, try again. I know you said it's a dead end, try again. Meet this man, Zelensky. He's almost begging to see him. But I understand we started discussions inside prison to resolve the question of fascism, apartheid here. It's not an easy thing to take the first step, but somehow people have got to find it in their hearts.
Mr. Sekhwali, can I challenge you a little bit? Because you've been calling for dialogue for quite some time, and I know you've been following this conflict from its very beginning. And I think it was in 2015 when you published an open letter to President Putin and President Obama, calling on them to overcome their hubris and come to the negotiating table. And to some extent, this call was heeded because President Putin and President Biden met in Geneva last summer, and they talked about the origins of the disagreements. But the United States continued militarizing Ukraine and continued using its land to present a military threat to Russia. Isn't there a certain point when the dialogue needs to stop so that the other side, you know, understands that, you know, stops using that dialogue to deliver harm to its adversary?
No, I wouldn't accept that. I know war, I've seen it, I've been a soldier, I've seen people die around us and so on. Our country was occupied for more than 300 years. So I understand this thing. And by the way, another thing I feel, we can even play a role and try to help with the prisoners. You know, they are about 2 months, the prisoners of war on both sides. We have been in prison for more than 15 years. So I wanted to say that the time of dialogue is always an opportunity to be seized. There's, you can't say no more talks. It's all, that opening must be kept alive. I'll plead with all the leaders, and I'm not talking for any organization. I belong to a lot of organizations, business and so on. But as an international citizen, and as somebody who has seen this thing, we might not be that clever, okay, but we are wise. Wisdom means that we've seen this thing before. Because it will end up in dialogue, let's keep the door open. And I'll plead with our brother in Moscow, open your heart. Don't reach a dead end yourself. I understand what he has said, but it's time for him to sit down, find a way, even, you know, first, just to meet face to face. I know it's not easy to take the first step. Leaders must not give up hope. For me, I live in that hope, the Nelson Mandela way. We negotiate. We started talking with the enemy, not negotiating, whilst we were still inside jail.
Mr. Sakhwali, if the Russian and Ukrainian people and the Russian and Ukrainian leaders indeed decide to meet, do you think it's within the capacity of the Ukrainian government, of the Ukrainian leadership, to put, not only to put an end to that war, but to implement the commitments that they may take upon themselves, among which is, for example, making Ukraine neutral? From what I hear of the Russian officials saying, they don't want the Ukrainian sovereignty. They don't want to decide anything for the Ukrainians. What they want is Ukraine to be neutral and stop presenting a strategic threat to Russia militarily. As long as that is taken care of, Ukrainians are free to perceive whatever fate they see for themselves. But do you think this decision rests within Kyiv's capacity, or that it perhaps needs to be taken elsewhere? And how would you persuade those powers elsewhere to commit to that?
I know you have raised this. These points have been raised publicly, but that's the essence of negotiation and deliberations and dialogue and diplomatic discussion. Those points we are raising are the points that ought to be handled at the discussion, because the first thing is cessation of all hostilities. You cease all hostilities. Secondly, no movement of further movement of troops. And then we can talk about the detail of all these guarantees which all sides want. Those are questions for the debate. You can't say do this before, because then it's something that must be agreed that we're going to meet about these things. Of course, those things must be achieved, but they are subjects of the discussions itself. The only thing that I'm saying, let the brother or sister countries themselves discuss. People should not come from outside and pour more fuel into the situation. President Zelensky has got the responsibility to stand up now as a person we respect, as a leader of your own people, as a patriot. And that's what he is. He's very passionate about his country. But be careful that Ukraine should not be controlled by others on our side. You are with selfies, you are delivering, you know, he's a good actor and he's got a good background and he's communicating very, very well. But let's be convinced that it's him and not other people behind him. This Azov thing, this Azov thing is a problem, these battalions. And of course, people who are pouring weapons from outside are not helping in the situation. We need more, as Churchill would say, more jaw, not war. So the people who are throwing in weapons, you know, maybe it's time for the warehouses of the world, which are full of weapons, to be emptied. That is what we are seeing right now. But this must come to an end. But definitely, in this part of the world, we are not fooled by all these gimmicks. The best thing is for the two countries to realize that at the end of the day, it's Russians and Ukrainians. At the end of the day, you are left on your own. Be careful when people are pouring petrol.
Can I ask you very quickly about something that you mentioned before, the effect that this conflict is having on the rest of the world? And there are many experts who are warning about the growing danger of mass hunger in developing countries because of the rising fuel and food prices prompted by the sanctions, Western sanctions against Russia. Isn't that also to some extent a sign of supremacy when a certain part of the world can decide that everybody else can suffer because of its decision to penalize, let's say, Russia or somebody else? Isn't that the very essence, if you will, of apartheid or fascism? And how, as the international community, we can deal with that, so that you in South Africa don't have to pay, let's say, for our Russian mistakes. Because at this point of time, the most vulnerable countries are not even asked, are forced to carry the burden of the Western sanctions because the West doesn't like something about Russia.
The globe is a global village. It's a limited world. No matter in the solar system, we are just this ball. Technologies, communications, transportation have reached such a high stage that whatever happens on the south part of the world is felt on this side, east, immediately, in record time. Now, the point of the sanctions, which are a form of war, when you impose the sanctions, you are declaring warfare against other people. It's affecting us. Now, we're carrying the burden of heat. We feel it at the petrol pumps. We feel it with medicines. We feel it almost everywhere. We're not part of this thing. That's why we have got the right. Somebody can say, what is this black man talking, who is right at the end of the world in South Africa? I have got the right as a citizen of the world to point the finger at the wrong thing that is happening. We can't carry the burden of these sanctions because they're illegal, these sanctions. They're unilateral. They're not United Nations sanctions. We in South Africa, Oksana, let me tell you, for 30 years we asked, from 1960 to 1990, we had asked for countries to impose sanctions on South Africa. They play jokes with us. The sanctions on Russia right now were there within one day. We understand the games that are being played. All we are saying is that, again, we are asking for people to recognize the following, and I'm going to say this for the last time. The danger of what is happening in that part of the world is that you can have this war breaking out into something else because of mistakes, incompetence, recklessness, or a miscalculation. You see, right now, the leaders of the world in this part of the world, NATO and everybody, including President Putin, are in danger because other people may take advantage of the situation and throw a missile on top of the Kremlin. Leaders, the White House, leaders, the Kremlin, leaders, President Zelensky, people have got to sit down. And by the way, this is the Nelson Mandela, you don't negotiate with friends. That's a chat. You negotiate with your enemies. If they're real enemies, you sit down and make peace with them. Wow. Look at how the World War II ended. You know, we're dealing with Hitler, but today we can talk with German people. But when it is on, you know, you think it's something that is going to go on forever. I cry for the children on both sides of the fence. These are all the children of the dawn. There's a book called And Quiet Flows the Dawn by Sholokhov. The dawn which is shared as a river by both Russian and Ukrainian people. You all belong.
Well, Mr. Sefale, I hope that's not only our past, but also our future. But we have to leave it there. Thank you very much for your wisdom.
I hope I've answered your questions. There's a lot to say about this subject. But for the children, let this war, let this conflict come to an end.
Thank you. And thank you to our viewers for watching. Hope to see you again next week on Worlds Apart. We'll be right back.